Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello, folks. Welcome to the podcast. If you're looking for a one-to-one teacher, someone who can give you English lessons, or like a coach who can listen to you, talk to you, give you guidance, give you feedback, if you want an organized teaching program, or if you just want someone to talk to you on a regular basis so you can get English into your regular life, check out iTalki. That's exactly the service for you. You can also get a free lesson when you buy some speaking time with them. Go to teacherluke.co.uk/talk to get that offer, or click an iTalki logo on my website. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, folks. Welcome to Luke's English Podcast. How are you doing out there in podcast land? I trust that you're well. That's a kind of fancy way of saying, how are you? It's like a formal way of saying, how are you? You don't use it very often. In fact, it's very rare to get formal when you're speaking. I trust that you are well. It is my great pleasure to welcome you into another episode of Luke's English Podcast. I trust that you're in good health. Welcome to the show. I'm actually recording this one on a little portable microphone thing. I don't need to go into all the details of that. I've already done that in enough detail recently, but I'm walking around while I'm recording this one. It makes a nice change. Instead of being stuck in a chair while I'm talking to you, I can actually walk around the place, and I'm walking around my flat. It's a boiling hot evening here in July in Paris. Boiling hot. Actually, I don't know what the temperature is, but I think it's... Today it was something like 35 degrees here, which is a little bit too hot for comfort, as far as I'm concerned. I know that many of you now are going, ha, 35 degrees, that's nothing. Where I'm from, it's basically molten lava where I'm living. You might be thinking that. It's like, you know that scene in the end of Star Wars Episode 3 where Darth Vader gets nearly burned alive, or Anakin Skywalker gets burned, and him and Obi-Wan Kenobi are having a big fight, and the whole planet is lava. That's where I live, Luke. So don't talk to me about 35 degrees. You might be thinking that. Equally, you might be thinking, where I'm from, it's constantly cold. I'm frozen to the bone right now. I'm essentially a block of ice. You might be thinking that. I'm like a snowman, basically, listening to this, and 35 degrees, that sounds like paradise. Well, you know, it's all subjective, isn't it? It's all a matter of perspective at the end of the day. It's all perspective, isn't it, at the end of the day. Yeah, you know, temperature and comfort and all that. But anyway, for me, 35 degrees is really a bit too hot, thank you very much. Can you just turn the temperature down? That would be nice. Evening time. And I'm walking around, and I've literally just come downstairs. I thought that I would start this episode off by walking around a little bit and talking to you while I'm getting myself a glass of water. Okay, and if you don't like it, then you're just going to have to live with it, because that's how I roll. Technically, I'm not rolling. I'm walking around. So I've just opened up the dishwasher, and I've got myself a glass, as you do. The glasses are boiling. Everything is hot. Everything is hot. The glasses come out of the dishwasher. They're all boiling hot. Like, literally, the floor tiles under my feet are warm. The floor is just warm. It's like someone left the heating on. It's like God left the heating on or something. Anyway, so I'm recording an episode here in the evening. It's very warm. But it's nice. The sun is kind of shining. Apparently, it's going to cool down over the next few days because it's going to rain. Oh, lovely rain. Oh, I like it when it rains when it's hot. because it's refreshing, isn't it? And it reminds me of home. Yeah. All right, close the dishwasher. Got my water. You're going to listen to me drinking a glass of water now. It's a free podcast, isn't it? Yes, it is. So you're getting your money's worth on this. Okay. Lovely, refreshing water from Paris. Actually, the water in Paris is not that bad. Someone told me that it's a combination, the tap water here is a combination of spring water, like natural spring water, and sort of reconstituted water or cleaned, you know, water that's been recycled and cleaned. Water that was once, at one point, it was waste, like sort of water that was recycled from the sewer system, essentially. I think many cities do that, right? They take the water that's been discarded, like waste water, and they clean it up in a number of different ways. I had a student in one of my classes not long ago who told me about the whole process. It was fascinating. I instantly forgot everything he said, though, as soon as I left the room. I've had lots of students doing presentations over the years on different subjects. Some of them have been fascinating, absolutely fascinating. I've been like riveted by the presentation, like listening not only to the subject, but paying attention to all the language they're using so I could give them feedback. Really interesting things. And almost all of them, I've just instantly forgotten them as soon as the presentation's finished. It's weird that, isn't it, the way that happens. Ooh, I've just noticed there are people on the balcony opposite me and they're looking at me. They must think, who's this weirdo? What's he doing? He's doing something weird again. Anyway, the sun is setting in the distance. There's a beautiful sunset. I should take a photo of that so I can put it on the website so you can see it. Let me take a photo of the sunset, ladies and gentlemen. Just doing that right now. Oh yeah, you can hear my phone. Maybe you can hear my phone, I don't know. This is fascinating stuff, isn't it, on the podcast. But like I said, you know, free, getting your money's worth on this one. Okay, so, okay, nearly fell over there. Oh, the drama of being able to move around while I'm doing the podcast. So, in this one, I'm going to do that thing where I go through some comments and questions from the website. I'm going to sort of talk to you about various things that have come up on the website recently. And we're going to start with... Well, I've got loads of things I could talk to you about. For example, I could talk to you about the fact that... are you interested? I don't know if you are. Of course you are. That's why you listen to Luke's English Podcast, isn't it? You expect a little bit of rambling from time to time. I could, for example, tell you about the fact that about 5 days ago I played an hour of football. So I played five-a-side football for the first time in about 5 years. It's been about 5 years since I played... football properly for any length of time, and about 5 days ago I was invited to play with a group of guys, these French guys. I know one of them. He invited me to come and join them, and we played five-a-side football on like an indoor pitch with fake grass, you know, the kind of thing. And it was brilliant. I absolutely loved it. So all of you out there who do exercise while you're listening to the podcast, like you're jogging, you're riding bikes and things, I totally get it. It's a brilliant idea. Do your exercise. It's really good. Now, for me, football is the thing that I like to do. Even though I haven't done it for ages, I do like to play football. I'm not the greatest player, but I'm also, you know, I'm not rubbish either. I'm not one of those total losers who can't. Who's just constantly running around trying to chase the ball, and then as soon as he gets it, he loses it. I'm a bit like that, but I can tackle. I can pass pretty well. If I get the right chance, I can hit the ball hard and low in order to score. And I like to play in goal. I like to try and stop the ball, you know. And I like the teamwork of a game of football. I like the psychology of the game, the tactics, the fact that you've got to move into space, that you have to, you know, that you're constantly running back and forth, trying to get into space, trying to draw defenders away from the goal, or, you know, creating space, moving into space, passing, and moving and all that stuff and creating little opportunities, and also the communication on the pitch. And it can be pretty basic, even in French, you know, just saying here, you know, pass, shoot, nice one, you know, all that kind of stuff. So that was fun. And as a result, though, because it was the first time I'd done that for about 5 years, naturally, my body is suffering as a result. So I'm aching. I think pretty much every muscle in my body is aching. Like every muscle that you can think of is aching. Every bone, every muscle. So I'm in a great deal of pain. But somehow, like mentally, it's very good for you. I think doing exercise, as you probably know, if you're running right now, you'll be experiencing it. Doing exercise releases all kinds of endorphins in your body. Endorphins, not dolphins. Endorphins. There are loads of endorphins running around in your body after you do exercise. They feel a bit like dolphins. It's like having loads of dolphins swimming around inside your body, but good dolphins. You know the way dolphins are happy? You've got that basically running through your body. Endorphins, technically. I think they're sort of, I don't know, what chemicals that the body releases when you do exercise, and they actually make you feel good. That's why they say doing exercise is a bit like a drug. You know, you get a rush or a high afterwards. It's brilliant. And also, I found that having run around for an hour exhausted myself completely. I mean, I was in real pain. I had stitch for an hour. Do you know what stitch means? Stitch is when you are doing exercise and you kind of, because you can't really breathe fully, you can't provide enough oxygen into your body that you need to, you get like a pain in your side. It could be like a sort of pain in your stomach or a pain in the side that just stays there. And it's like, oh, so you're running around with this stitch in your side or in your stomach. So I had stitch for the entire time. I was basically out of breath for the entire time. And I sweated buckets during the game. I'm still sweating now. I'm still sweating. Hear my voice. I'm still sweating now. Anyway. But it felt good. And the effects of, I guess, those endorphins, or the fact that you flush out a lot of the sort of toxins when you do all that sweating. You're flushing out a lot of the toxins and things. And it I guess the endorphins as well, they mean that you feel less stressed. You feel less anxiety. You have less frustration. You get a clear head. You end up with a nice positive feeling. You feel a bit lighter and more positive. It's really, really nice. So if you are out there feeling a bit, depressed, or feeling a bit down, or just feeling a bit lethargic or a bit sluggish, you could say, then, you know, get up off your backside and do some exercise. Hard exercise for an hour. You know, do enough exercise that you feel the pain. You know, you sweat a lot and you feel out of breath. Do that for about an hour, and your body will ache afterwards, especially if you don't stretch and warm up and warm down. Your body will ache, but you will get a really good effect from it, which will be that it'll just make you feel better. It just really sort of clears your head and generally makes you feel better. It's good for the mind, it's good for the body, and it's good for the soul, I think. So there you go. That's just something about doing exercise. Also this week I'm working hard. I'm teaching a very intensive teaching schedule at work this week, and also last week at the British Council where I work. Sometimes I have these intensive courses. We do intensive courses during the summer. That's where you teach 30 hours in 1 week. So students come and they choose to study English for 6 hours a day for 5 days. So that's 30 hours. And it's that intensive. You know, everyone's quite tired. It's great because you really get to really go into some detail. They get loads of practice and feedback and all that stuff. It's really good sort of workshop, and it's a really intensive week, you know. But it also is quite exhausting, especially in these temperatures. And it's been very hot and sort of quite exhausting. So that's what I've been doing recently. What about you? What have you been up to? How's work? Going all right? Yeah. What's the temperature like? 900 degrees. Oh, my goodness. Keep drinking lots of water, okay? If you're on the other side of the world or in the southern hemisphere or something, it might be winter. So keep yourself warm. Just imagine that you're in Paris, where it's boiling hot, right now. You could just do that. Let's get into the comments section and go through a few comments and things that I've picked out that have arrived recently. I've done this. This is the third time I've done this fairly recently. But there's so much stuff going on in the comments section that it's quite a nice way to build episodes, and I don't have to do that much preparation work. I just pick out a few comments, and then Bob's your uncle. First thing I wanted to say, I just wanted to ask if how many listeners I have in Germany. How many German Lepsters do I have out there? Now, I'm asking that is because there was some talk in the comments section of a Lepsters meetup in Germany. And I'm just sort of floating the idea out there, just in case I've got any German listeners. I'm not sure where you all are, but I'd just like to get an indication of, you know, how many people I've got listening in Germany. And the question is, would you like to get together with each other and meet up and speak English and, you know, meet some fellow listeners and have a nice time speaking English? If you would like to do that, just, well, pay it. I would say watch this space, okay? Let me know, first of all. Hello, I'm in Germany. I'd love to meet up. Can you let me know when it's going to happen and where it might happen? You could send me a message like that. But also, just watch this space, because I think that someone might be setting up a German Lepsters meetup at some point, but I'm not sure where it is exactly. So it's just a bit of a heads up, that one. Just a bit of a heads up. You know, just to bring your attention to something. Just a bit of a heads up about the possible meetup for listeners in Germany coming soon. So watch this space for more details of that. By the way, for those of you out there in other places where you haven't had a Lepsters meetup, feel free to get one organised, you know. You know, just if you want to do one, you could set up a meeting, create the event, like choose your place and time and date, and then let me know and I can announce it, and hopefully you'll get some people joining you. Okay, here's a message from Adam. Adam is a listener who wrote to me a while ago and told me about his commute. Remember his journeys to work, his commute. Apparently when he's commuting to work, he has to travel quite a lot in his job, and he listens to Luke's English podcast while he's commuting, and he's the one who came up with a measurement of time, or a measurement of distance. He decided to call it a Luke. I think a Luke is the distance that you can travel in one episode of the podcast. I think that's one version of a Luke, or either that a Luke is just like the about 75 minutes, which is a sort of typical length of the podcast. So one Luke is equivalent to about 75 minutes. We've got an hour, which is 60 minutes, and a Luke is 75 minutes. I'm very flattered that someone has decided to name a unit of measurement after me. That's very nice of you. I doubt that it'll be taken on by the global community, but you know, you can hope, can't you? Anyway, Adam wrote this to me. He said, "Hi, Luke." Hi, Adam. I've just done one of the best or worst things in my life. Only time will tell. I've just visited one of my colleagues in Romania during a business trip. His name is Laurentiu. Okay, I've probably pronounced that badly. But anyway, Laurentiu. Okay. Laurentiu, by the way, hello. If you're listening, hello. Hello to you, Laurentiu. This is kind of a special message for you here. But it might apply to other people listening to this as well. So, Adam said, during a business trip, I met one of my colleagues in Romania. His name is Laurentiu. And I've never seen such a shy person who completely has no trust in his English skills, except maybe myself years ago. One could ignore this if English was not a must in our international company. But without English, he will lose the chance for communication among colleagues, professional development, promotion, etc. What is funnier is that probably 30% of the words in our language are almost the same as in English. They're based on Latin origin. So Adam here is talking about Laurentiu, his colleague who doesn't really speak English very well. And someone who is very shy about it. And basically, Adam wants me to encourage Laurentiu to pursue English and to improve his English. And I'm going to continue reading what Adam wrote. He said, I gave him homework for the next 30 days. I've copied for him about 50 of your podcasts. I hope he will hear at least one per day travelling to the plant and back home. He spends 2 hours daily on the bus. Wow, Adam, homework of 50 podcast episodes in 30 days. That really is, that's like binge listening. I hope that Laurentiu likes the podcast. If he likes it, obviously that's going to be a pleasurable experience. If he's not keen on it, that might be difficult, but we'll see. And Adam continued by saying, I think everybody deserves a chance, like I got several times. I was thinking that you could give some courage to Laurentiu. If it isn't me, he might believe you. Thank you, Luke. Regards, Adam. P.S. I still measure time in Lukes. Today, it was about 4.5 Lukes to get home. 4.5 Lukes? That's a long journey. So, Laurentiu, hello. Hello, hello, Laurentiu. If you're listening, hello. And I would just like to say, I know how you feel, okay? I mean, it sounds like you're quite... I don't know. It sounds like you're a beginner in English. I wonder if you can understand any of the words that are coming out of my mouth right now. Do you understand? Do you understand what I'm saying? I don't know. Ask Adam to help you if you need the help. But anyway, Laurentiu, if you are listening, I know how you feel, all right? You're shy about, you know, using English. I know how you feel because I have similar experiences with French, okay? And it's about habit. It's about getting into the habit of practicing the new language. And it's about breaking your mental barrier because it's kind of a mental barrier that's stopping you. It's about breaking your attitude and trying to get into the habit of using English and trying to develop a positive approach to doing it. I struggle with French probably for similar reasons to you, Laurentiu, because I feel shy about speaking French. I feel bad that my French isn't better than it is, you know. But the thing is, like, how can you persuade someone to change their mind? Laurentiu, how can we persuade you to change your mind and take a more active approach, a more proactive approach to your English? What can we do? Because I know from personal experience, I hate it when people go on at me and put pressure on me. Like, I honestly, even though they're right, I can't stand it. Like, Luke, you need to be speaking French. It's like, I know. They're right, but still, I can't stand having the pressure put on me. So maybe I know how you feel, Laurentiu. Maybe you feel annoyed that people are sort of pressurizing you. Maybe Adam is like really annoying. I don't know. But anyway, I'm sure that, Laurentiu, I'm sure that you know the reasons why you should learn English. So what can we say to you, Laurentiu, that's going to help you? And I think about myself. I think, what do I need to hear? What would I like to hear that would help me to do more French? What are the things I would like to hear? So here is just some things that I think I would like to hear that equally you might like to hear too. So first thing is about learning a language, about coming out of your comfort zone, about speaking the new language and just experimenting without being worried about making mistakes. The first thing is it's a lot of fun, actually. It really is. It's a lot of fun to play around and practice a new language. It's fun. And the more you do it, the more fun it is, you see. Because every time you're doing it, you break through a little barrier every time. And it can be a lot of fun. You can experiment. You're speaking a new language. It's like becoming a new person. And that's really exciting, actually. So, you know, just consider it to be a fun thing, actually, in your life. And, Laurentiu, you can do it your own way. You can do it your own way. It's totally up to you. You don't have to do it in the way that they taught you at school. You can do it any way you want to do it. It's completely up to you. There are so many things you can do, you know, whether it's just watching Game of Thrones in English or it's a, you know, talking to people about Game of Thrones. I don't know if you like Game of Thrones or whatever it is you like. You know, there's loads of things. I'm sure if you're listening to 50 podcasts in 30 days, I've probably given you a few ideas, I hope. But anything and everything you do in English is good. It's all good. It's all money in the bank, essentially, you know? So I would say, don't worry about what's the best way to start. Don't worry about finding the perfect way to do it. Just start in any way that you can, even if it's not perfect. You know, listen, read things, speak, do some exercises if you've got a book. Make mistakes, learn from your mistakes. Don't worry, you're not going to learn it all, okay? You're not going to learn it all, but you can learn a bit, and that's much better than nothing. So make mistakes, experiment, have fun, and you will make progress, okay? You will, if you just do a few things. You could maybe listen. You could just do a little bit per day. You could just do 10 minutes of English per day, 10 minutes of reading or 10 minutes of listening, for example. You could maybe try 10 minutes of Luke's English podcast per day. Okay, you've got your 50 episodes, and this one as well, if you're listening to it. What if he's not listening? Well, imagine that, if he's just not listening and I'm just talking to nobody. But anyway, everyone else, you're listening in on the conversation, right? You're all there going, yeah, yeah, Laurentiu. Yeah, what he said. That's what you're all thinking right now. Or maybe you're going, oh, maybe I need to be doing that too. Or maybe this is something I could tell my friend. Or maybe this is something I could tell Luke about his French. Clearly, this is what he wants to hear as well. But no one's telling me. So you could write to me and say, oh, Luke, just do this, just do that. Hey, just have fun. Don't be afraid to make mistakes. It's all part of the experience. You could, Laurentiu, you could do just 10 minutes a day. If you've got your 50 podcasts, you could just listen for a minimum of 10 minutes of each episode. So start the episode and listen to 10 minutes. Try just to get 10 minutes. Okay, 10 minutes minimum. You can't stop it for 10 minutes. Okay, you keep listening. If you don't like it, after 10 minutes, you can stop. You can do something else. But if you do like it, if it's not that bad, if you kind of enjoy it and you understand a few things, then you can keep going for a bit. Maybe you could break it down into 10-minute chunks. I'll listen to 10 minutes, and then if I don't like it, I can stop. Or I keep listening for another 10 minutes, you know, break it down into 10 minutes. Adam, you might need to help explain this. I don't know what Laurentiu's listening level is. But just listen to 10 minutes. Just try to understand what's being said. Just relax. That's it. No pressure. Just take it step by step. Start with a little bit. Later on, you can start doing other things. You can start doing more complicated ways of practicing. But right now, just 10 minutes, when you see Adam, talk to him a little bit about some of the things you heard, even if you don't like it. You could tell him in English, I thought it sucked. It was boring. He kept talking about stupid things. As long as you're speaking English, as long as you're using English, that's the most important thing. Okay, another comment from Adam here on the same subject. Adam said, hi, Luke. I'm just finishing my business trip to Romania. So this is like later on. He said, no vacation, just a job in many plants in different places in Europe. Last week, I was trying to convert Laurentiu to English. Let's wait and see how it works. I have a feeling that I've successfully infected my other Romanian colleague, Christian, with leperholism. So Adam is apparently going around infecting people with leperholism, like some sort of podcast zombie going around Europe. Zombie or I was going to say vampire, but that would just be a cliche, wouldn't it, Adam? That would be that. Christian, Adam, Laurentiu, I'm not going to do the vampire thing because you've heard it before, haven't you? No, I'm going to stick to zombie. Okay, so you're like a podcast zombie and you're going around infecting people with leperholism. Fine, that's great. Go ahead. And good, I'm glad that you've converted or infected Christian with leperholism. That's great. Adam continues by saying, I hope that you're not angry if I try to cure myself with the In Our Time podcast. What do you mean, Adam? Try and cure yourself with the In Our Time podcast. Oh, I see what you're doing is you're trying to get off the leperholism by listening to the In Our Time podcast. No, I don't mind. Go ahead. It's a BBC podcast, In Our Time, presented by Melvin Bragg, I think, who used to be on TV for many years in the UK. Yeah, go ahead. Of course. Of course, Adam. Yeah, go ahead. Fine. And he said, please, if you could encourage Laurentiu and he could hear this, it would be great. See my previous podcast comment. Regards, Adam. Okay, well, here are some... here are some other things that Adam said. He said, can you imagine being so afraid to say more than three words and then you jump to your comfort zone, to your language? He's like this. Well, Adam, yeah, I can imagine that, because sometimes I'm a bit like that. I'll speak a bit of French and then I'm just like, and I'll just shut up for a while because I'm just too shy about it. Honestly. And Adam said, I know the following story. This is Adam's story that he wrote to me. 17 years ago, a young, well-educated guy went to an interview to get a good job in a big American food company. I wonder which company it was. Let's say it was McDonald's. So what, you needed a job in McDonald's? I'm joking. Anyway, so he said he got, like other candidates, a case study, a real problem, and he gave quite an interesting solution to it. Finally, he qualified for the next round. Everything went well until the check of the English language. The guy wisely said, I've learnt German in 1 year, so for sure I'll learn English. But at the moment, I cannot say anything longer than my name is. So, yeah, I can't speak English now, but I learnt German in 1 year. No problem, I'm sure I can manage English. I'll do it later. I can say my name is, but I'll get English later on. No problem. The manager seemed to understand, so he tried to encourage the guy. The discussion was like this. Just please say anything. That's the manager speaking. Just say anything. And the answer from the guy was like, no, not now, but I will learn, definitely, in the future. I'll start tomorrow. Okay, but not now. I can't do it now, okay? Eventually, the guy was so convincing that the manager could not give him the job. Right? And the message ends with, I hope, Luke, that you will not ask who the guy was. I think we know who the guy was, Adam. Is this one of those things where you're talking about someone else, but maybe it's the person who's telling the story? Don't ask who the guy was. We'll know. We know it was you, Adam. Obviously, it was you. But it's a great story. And the moral of the story, I think, is that, don't do it tomorrow. Don't do it tomorrow. If you keep saying, no, I can't do it now. No. Eventually the manager will be like, no. Okay, no, you can't have the job then. So positivity. You've got to be positive. You've got to take a risk. You've got to step outside your comfort zone and do it now. Don't do it tomorrow. Yes, Laurentiu. Here are some other things that I'm going to say to you. Is this overkill? Maybe. I'll do it quite quickly. You can read this on the website. Don't be shy. Give it a try. Laurentiu, don't be shy, give it a try. The worst thing you can do is to say nothing and do nothing. In language learning, the worst thing you can do is to say nothing and do nothing. But lots of people do because they're shy. If you're worried about making mistakes, the biggest mistake is to do nothing. Don't do it later, do it now, do it right now. Even if you're on your own, speak some English to yourself. If you're in the car, just speak a little bit of English to yourself. It doesn't matter. No one's judging you. Don't put it off until later. Later doesn't exist in language learning. There is only now. Speak English now, you must. I sound like Yoda. There is only now. Do or do not. There is no try. Stretch out with your feelings, Laurentiu. Use the force. The force is strong with this one. Feel the English, Laurentiu. Breathe, relax. Let the English flow through you. And if you're worried about looking stupid, don't worry too much, okay? It's not worth it. Sorry, okay? I know you're worried about making a fool of yourself. You're worried about looking stupid. I can hear Laurentiu now go, No, I'm not. Well, why aren't you doing it then? Yeah, okay, maybe you're a little bit shy. Why are you shy? You're worried about looking stupid? Well, sorry, nobody really cares that much. We don't really care that much if you look that stupid. No one cares, really. Nobody's judging you as much as you are judging yourself. So just give yourself a break. No one cares as much as you do. It doesn't matter that much. It's not a big deal. Every day, millions of people around the world, I promise, millions of people who are learning English are experiencing, and not just English, millions of people who are learning any second language are experiencing exactly the same feelings as you right now, in exactly the same situation. Millions of people are feeling shy and they are breaking out of their shyness and they're taking a risk and they're doing it and they're benefiting and they're moving on and they're learning languages, right? Millions of people are in the same situation. So do you think that you're different to them? anyone can learn English. The only thing stopping you is you, actually. Now, you feel like an idiot when you speak another language, right? And you don't want to look like an idiot who can't express yourself and who can't make the right sounds. That's, you know, I feel like an idiot when I'm speaking French. It's true. I shouldn't. I mean, like, for example, I read in the comments section today, Antonio, one of the members of the Orion transcription team, saying this. He said, I never feel stupid when I make a mistake in a foreign language. If I'm making a mistake in English, I never feel stupid. The thing that makes me feel stupid is if I make a mistake in my first language. That's a good reason to feel stupid. But if you're learning a language, there's no reason to feel stupid if you make a mistake. It's part of the learning process. So, you know, I know you don't want to look like an idiot who can't express yourself. I feel the same in French, because certain sounds in French are difficult to make, like the R sounds and certain vowel sounds like U, which I can't really do very well. And if I want to order water, as I've said on the podcast before, de l'eau, which I can't say very well, un bouteille d'eau or un verre d'eau, un carafe d'eau, I can't say it very well. I can't say it confidently. That's the problem. It's the confidence. I can't say the thing with confidence. So if I'm ordering water in a bar or in a restaurant or a cafe or something, obviously I don't order water in a bar usually. I order the strongest of alcoholic beverages. Anyway, if I'm ordering water from a waiter, I always feel really self-conscious because I'm like, un carafe d'eau, s'il vous plaît. You know, I make it sound English. D'eau. That's not how you're supposed to say it. So I feel self-conscious too, but it doesn't matter. You know, yeah, whatever. Anyway, so no one will think you're an idiot that much. You're just judging yourself. In fact, people will probably be impressed that you're making an effort. They'll find it charming. They'll find it nice that you're trying to speak another language. And if someone judges you, then it just means that they're a loser who's not worth worrying about, okay? So when you speak English or when you speak another language, it can feel like you're not in control. That's the thing also that makes people feel uncomfortable. You feel like you're losing control a little bit. But not being in control is the greatest thing ever. It's really fun. People love not being in control. We drink, we go crazy to music, we go on a roller coaster at Disneyland or something. We do all these things so that we can feel like we're not in control. Okay? It's fun. So enjoy the feeling of danger and excitement in taking a risk with English. And anyway, it's not even that risky. What's the worst that's going to happen? What are you worried about? You're going to break your tongue? Oh, I spoke English. I broke my tongue. What's the matter with you? Oh, imagine some guy turning up at the office. He's on crutches. His legs and head are all bandaged up. It's like, what happened to him? Oh, he tried to speak English. What happened? Did you injure your chin? It's not going to happen. Okay. It's perfectly fine. Take it one step at a time, Laurentiu. Laurentiu. Do you like the way I'm saying his name? Laurentiu. Laurentiu. Just take it one step at a time. You don't have to be brilliant at the start. You can be crap at the start. It's fine. Anyway, I'm sure you're not that crap. I'm sure you're better than you think. Just improvise as well. Just make it up as you go along. No one's got a clue what they're doing anyway. You'll be fine. Everyone has to, if you're a beginner, right? Everyone has to be a beginner when you begin. That's why it's called being a beginner. Okay? How can you expect to do something without beginning it? You have to begin everything. You have to be a starter. You have to start everything. Imagine if I wanted to eat a pizza, right? But I didn't want to start the pizza. I didn't want to start eating. I just want to eat the pizza without starting. It's impossible. You can't eat any of it without starting. Kind of a stupid analogy, but you know what I mean. So everyone has to be a beginner when you begin. That's why it's called being a beginner. But when you don't even begin, when you don't even start, you're nothing, right? You're not even a beginner. You're nothing if you don't start. You're just a monkey spinning through space. There's no name for you if you do nothing. You're just zero, nothing, just a line. So open your mouth and say something and you'll automatically be upgraded from nothing from a monkey spinning through the universe in space, in a vacuum of space, you'll be upgraded from that to beginner on Earth with all your friends. An immediate level up. I think I'm over-egging the pudding, ladies and gentlemen. Don't you think? I think I'm over-egging the pudding a little bit. To over-egg the pudding, that's when you do too much. You go a little bit over the top. You add, you know, you do too much. Too much, Luke. Okay, that's enough. You've over-egged the pudding. I think you can move on. Okay. All right then, Laurentiu. Sorry for going on at you, okay? But, you know, I've got the best intentions. And listen to Adam. He knows what he's talking about. He speaks from experience because his friend also went through a difficult experience like that too. When I say his friend, yes, I mean him. That's right. Next thing. So some people have been taking part in Jill Marnie's 15-day challenge. Perhaps by the time this episode is published, the 15-day challenge will be over. It started on the 17th of July, so you can do the maths on that one. 7th of July it started. So 15 days after that, and the 15-day challenge will have ended. But anyway, as I'm recording this, some people are still doing it. So if you're part of the challenge, I hope that you're managing to keep up with all of those episodes, all those 15 episodes, and that you've been discovering or rediscovering some episodes from the archives, and that you've found Jill Marnie's little grammar and vocab quizzes to be useful. I think it's a great idea. Well done, Jill Marnie, for doing it. Now, I got a comment. A few people have been commenting on the old episodes, which is quite interesting. Some people have been going back in time to old episodes and commenting on them. And now coming back to the future again to listen to this one, I suppose. So, for example, Naomi wrote a comment on episode 30, which was called The Mystery Continues. The Mystery Continues is the second part of a little mystery story that I wrote for the podcast. And it basically tells the story of how I got involved in like this weird... It's a fictional story, of course, about how I got involved in a weird sort of... kind of alien encounter in London next to the River Thames, and I had to go and visit Sherlock Holmes in Baker Street in order to investigate what had happened. And then there's like this Sherlock Holmes investigation, and it ends with a sort of science fiction ending, and it's related to Doctor Who and stuff. And Naomi wrote, she said, "I love this story. It's amazing and funny, both the story and Luke's narration. Thanks, Naomi." In terms of the grammar, I often get confused between "I jumped in a cab" and "I jumped on a bus." So in a cab, on a bus, on the train. Does it depend on the vehicles? How do I know which preposition to use? So it's basically in a cab. It's in or on. This is the question. In a taxi, on a bus, on a train. Which preposition is it? Does it depend on the vehicle? Well, Naomi, yes, it does depend on the vehicle. And actually, my friend Carrick Cameron, who I used to work with, he came up with this, he told me this little theory or little way of explaining it. I don't know where he got it from. I understand it's probably a well-known idea, but Carrick said to me this one, basically, if you can stand up on that vehicle or in the vehicle, if you can stand up, it's on. And if you can't stand up, it's in. So it's, for example, I am on a bus and I am in a bus, okay? I'm on a bus and I'm in a car, okay? So if you can stand up, it's on. And if you can't stand up, it's in. So let's test it on a few different types of transport, okay? So I'm going to say some transport, modes of transport. I want you to tell me if it's I am on it or I'm in it, okay? Car. That's right, I'm in a car. Taxi, it's basically a car, isn't it? So I'm in a taxi. Horse, I'm on a horse. I mean, you could say I'm in a horse, but that would mean something else. I'll let your imagination do the work there. Fine. Bike, I'm on a bike because you can stand up on it. Yeah, you know that thing where you stand up on the pedals of the bike? Yeah, that. I'm on a bike. Motorbike, same thing. I stand on a motorbike. I'm on a motorbike. You stand on, you know, you can stand up when you're riding it. A canoe, a kayak. You know, one of those things that you use if you're sort of on a lake or something, you might have a canoe. All right, find a long, thin boat with one person in it. A canoe. Well, you are probably in a canoe, I would say. In a canoe. It is possible to stand up in a canoe, but I mean, we all know it's not ideal, is it? Because when you do have to stand up in a canoe, that's always a really sort of difficult, tricky moment. Whoa, I'm going to stand up in the canoe. I'm going to fall in the water. No, sit down in the canoe so you're in the canoe. Fine. Helicopter. Depends on the size of the helicopter. If it's a small one, you're in the helicopter. If it's a really big one, like one of those massive army helicopters, you can say I'm on the helicopter. If it's big enough for you to stand up. A plane, again, if it's a big plane where you can walk around inside, it's on the plane. If it's a small one with a tiny little cockpit, like a fighter jet or something, you're in the plane. Spitfire, in a Spitfire, that's a kind of fighter jet. A fighter plane from World War II. It had propellers on the front, a propeller on the front. So in a Spitfire. Tank, it's in a tank, isn't it? Unless you're standing on top of the tank, in which case you're on a tank. You're either standing on it or sitting on it. But, you know, inside it, obviously you're in a tank. Camel, you can be, again, on a camel. Or technically you could be in a camel, but, you know, I refer you back to the horse example from before. I actually saw a Bear Grylls episode. Do you know Bear Grylls? He's like a British survival expert. He's one of these guys who can go out into the wilderness with just like a sort of a pocket calculator, and he can survive by eating sand and catching insects with his tongue and, you know, that kind of thing. I saw an episode of Bear Grylls where he was in the desert and he needed shelter, okay, in the desert. Shelter from the sun or shelter from the cold at night. And you know what he did? There was a dead camel. He climbed inside the camel for shelter. Ugh. So you could say, I'm in a camel. Like if someone had called him on his phone, if he had a phone with him. Ring, 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 ring. This is Bear Grylls. Hi, Bear, it's Luke. How are you doing? Oh, I'm fine, thanks. Where are you? I'm just in a camel. What? Yeah, I'm in the desert and it got a bit hot, so I climbed inside a camel.
You climbed inside a camel?
Yeah, I'm making a TV program, okay? I'm actually staying in a hotel, but I did, I got in a camel because it looks good on TV and I thought that maybe you can talk about it on the podcast. That might be interesting.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I'll mention that when I do the prepositions thing.
Exactly, yeah. I'm in a camel. In a camel, on a camel. That's quite good. Okay, right. Well, I better go because I'm in a dead camel. It's not very nice. I'd rather go back to the hotel and have a shower now, Luke, okay?
All right, Bear Grylls. I won't keep you. That's a very interesting name you've got there.
Yes, it is, isn't it?
Bear Grylls.
Yeah, that's right. Can we stop the phone call now?
Yeah, sure. Okay, look. Bye then. Bye. Enjoy the shower.
Click. So I'm on a camel, I would imagine. Skateboard. On a skateboard. Train. On a train. Boat. Well, again, depends on the size of the boat, but most of the time you'd say I'm on a boat. If it's a tiny little boat, you'd say I'm in a boat. Like, for example, if it's a dinghy. A dinghy, that's like one of those little boats that they have on the side of other boats. You know, when the big boat goes wrong and you can put the dinghy into the water and everyone jumps into the dinghy and they probably will die in it. I don't know. It depends if they're out in the middle of the Pacific Ocean and they get rescued or not. But anyway, a dinghy is a little boat. Often it's inflated, isn't it? Hovercraft. If it's a big hovercraft, you're on it. If you get the idea, right? UFO? UFO. Probably in a UFO. If it's a small one, if it's a massive one, it's on a UFO. You get it. Okay, fine. No worries. All right, then. What time is it? How long have I been going? Have I been going for long enough? I might just... I might cut my losses and sort of stop here. I don't know. What do you think?
Do you want some more? Okay, come on, let's have some more. All right, then. So I got another message on the website recently. I get, you know, obviously loads of comments going on all the time, but here's another one I picked out. And this one is from a listener called Salwa, and it's about formal and informal language. And I thought this might be an interesting one to look at. And this is Salwa replying to the episode, the last episode about get. Okay, that whole thing about get. And so Salwa said... brilliant. I like the idea of dedicating the whole episode to one specific delexical verb. I love learning phrasal verbs and expressions. Learning these will help us end the intermediate plateau. You mean like sort of get off the intermediate plateau. Looking forward to more episodes on other verbs in the future, like go, put and keep, for example. Salwa, you should check out A Phrasal Verb a Day. 130-ish episodes, each with an individual, a different phrasal verb in each episode. Check out the website, look, click on episodes or hover the mouse over episodes and find phrasal verb episodes and Bob's your uncle. So, and Salwa says, but we shouldn't use phrasal verbs in formal speech and formal writing, should we? And she says, I don't know. I know that I shouldn't use phrasal verbs in formal emails, but again, articles in newspapers today are taking more and more of an informal tone. The line between formal and informal English is not completely clear for me, and it's a bit confusing. Thank you, Luke, for this wonderful episode. Oh, thanks, Salwa. It's nice when people say nice things. Salwa, yeah, you're right. You're right about what you said, basically, that yeah, we don't generally use phrasal verbs in very formal writing, like very formal emails or academic writing. That's true. And I understand that the line between formal and informal English is a little bit unclear. I'm going to try and explain it a little bit. Here are some comments, right? So I would say, yeah, you're right. You probably shouldn't use phrasal verbs in very formal writing, like impersonal emails and letters, like very impersonal emails and letters, very formal stuff. And academic writing. But they do appear in newspaper articles that use a neutral tone, and sometimes they appear in financial reports that that use quite a lot of idiomatic language, including phrasal verbs like shot up, like sales shot up in the last quarter, or picked up, you know, sales dropped in February, but then they picked up in March. So that kind of language is sometimes used in financial reporting. But, yeah, very impersonal emails and letters and academic writing, you probably shouldn't use phrasal verbs there. So let me just tell you a few more things or talk a little bit more, ramble a little bit more about formality. So let's talk about formality in writing and in speaking a little bit. It depends on the situation, of course, as you know. Let's look at writing first. So people seem to think, right, that phrasal verbs might be these very informal and therefore disrespectful language or something. It's not really the case. Like, phrasal verbs are very common in neutral speech and writing. Neutral speech and writing, including in professional contexts, in newspaper articles, including stories about financial reports and things like that. You see them all the time in those contexts. So phrasal verbs are not like rude or inappropriate. They're neutral, really. To be honest, the vast majority of the English that you will use will be in a neutral tone. It's fairly rare that I write or speak in a formal way, to be honest with you. The vast majority of the English I'm using is just neutral. So let's have a look at these different forms. Number one, formal. Number two, neutral. And number three, informal. Okay? So starting with formal language, in writing, this is basically formal language is primarily an impersonal form. It's impersonal. It's about creating an impersonal distance. For example, university essays and assignments, you'd use formal style in those sorts of writing. Professional correspondence in which you have to use lots of distance because of the respectful sort of nature of the relationship. If you want to show a respectful distance, then formal language would be appropriate in that. And you use it when you're communicating on behalf of the company with people that you don't know.
and you want to add that impersonal distance to show respect, high levels of politeness, and so on. Also, it can make you sound, when you're speaking, it can make you sound incredibly old-fashioned and distant, like a bad guy from a science fiction movie or Dracula or something like that. If you speak with a highly formal tone, it can make you sound very old-fashioned, like I did at the beginning of the episode. I trust that you are well. You know, I trust that you are in good health. I trust Lord Vader. I trust that you are in good health. I see you have some breathing problems. But that's normal. Okay, sorry. Okay, this isn't appropriate style, is it, to talk to you?
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
You know, that kind of thing. Sorry, the formality broke down there a little bit, didn't it? But if you speak in a really formal tone, it's going to make you sound very old-fashioned and impersonal. Like the way that Darth Vader speaks to... Like the way that the staff on the Death Star speak to each other. They speak in this very sort of stiff kind of formal tone.
Vader, this is an unexpected pleasure. We're honored by your presence.
You may dispense with the pleasantries, Commander. I'm here to put you back on schedule.
I assure you, Lord Vader, my men are working as fast as they can.
Perhaps I can find new ways to motivate them.
I tell you, this station will be operational as planned.
The Emperor does not share your optimistic appraisal of the situation.
But he asks the impossible. I need more men.
Then perhaps you can tell him when he arrives.
The Emperor's coming here?
That is correct, Commander. And he is most displeased with your apparent lack of progress.
We shall double our efforts.
I hope so, Commander, for your sake. The Emperor is not as forgiving as I am.
Then you've got informal language, which is much more personal. This is like the way that you would speak to a friend or a family member, someone you're very close to. It can sound very friendly on one hand, but also if you use it in the wrong context, it can be rude. It can be very familiar, too close, too presumptuous and close if you're using it in the wrong situation. Imagine, for example, if you're writing to the Queen or if you are just talking, if you've met the Queen. Obviously, if you're talking to the Queen, you need to sort of use a very formal style. Hello, Your Majesty. It's a great pleasure to meet you, for example. I don't know if she likes Your Majesty. I think she prefers to be called Ma'am. Anyway, if you're writing to the Queen, you'd probably adopt a formal tone, right? What you wouldn't do is use excessively informal language, because that would, you know, be inappropriate. If you can imagine, hi, Liz, what's up? So how are you handling this heat wave? It's a nightmare, isn't it? It's so hot. I'm totally boiling in my flat. Because I live in a tiny little flat. It's a horrible little scummy piece of crap, really, compared to your amazing house. But, I'm totally boiling in my flat. There's no aircon because my landlord's an absolute idiot. I mean, WTF, right? I bet you're keeping cool, though, because you've got so many fans, lol. So on one hand, that's very friendly and relaxed, but on the other hand, it shows absolutely no respect if you aren't personal friends with that person, because it's too close, isn't it? There isn't enough distance. And then neutral language, which is like somewhere in the middle. And in fact, you can get formal neutral style or informal neutral style. So neutral's big, you know, you can get neutral that's a bit formal and neutral that's a little bit informal. Basically, neutral language is a little bit personal and friendly sounding. It makes you sound like a human, you know, but it's not so friendly to the extent that you seem... it's not so friendly that you seem overly familiar, you know. You know, it's not too formal so that you sound distant and cold and old-fashioned, but it's also not too familiar so that you don't seem inappropriately friendly. It's just the whole space in the middle. And as I said, the vast majority of language that we use every day is neutral language. It can be a bit more formal, for example, using no contractions or probably using the bigger Latin words or certain polite constructions, or it can be slightly less formal where you're using contractions and maybe slightly more emotive language or slightly incomplete sentences, for example. But neutral kind of covers most of the forms of communication that we have. Here are some examples, okay? Here are some examples. What do you think would be appropriate? Would it be appropriate to be formal, neutral, or informal in these situations? What do you think? So the first one is this. Darth Vader and Emperor Palpatine, who are the leaders of the Galactic Empire, like the most powerful people in the world, very serious dudes. Darth Vader and Emperor Palpatine are visiting your office, and you're writing a welcoming letter to be presented to them on arrival. Well, of course, it would be formal, right? It would be deeply impersonal, formal. You know, on behalf of the staff at the office, we should like to extend to you our warmest welcome. We sincerely appreciate the visit of Your Royal Highness the Emperor and Lord Darth Vader, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, that's like formal neutral, I'd say that is. And what about this one? A letter from the management company about the annual expenditure and building costs on the flat that you own in London. So I'm going to give you a real example now. I do have a little flat in London where I used to live, and I rent it out to a tenant. The whole thing is run by an agent. So they write these letters to all of the people who've got legal relations with the building. So there's a whole building, and like, you know, different people own the flats in the building. And so the company responsible for managing all of the legal stuff, they write in this kind of style. So the letter has a big title in the middle, and it says, "Notice pursuant to Section 20B of the Landlord and Tenancy Act 1985. And it goes, "Pursuant to Section 20B of the Landlord and Tenant Act 1985 as amended, notice is hereby given on behalf of the Queen's Gardens Association Limited, the landlord of the above property, that expenditure in the amount of blah de blah de blah pounds have been incurred in respect of the building's running costs in the year ended 24th of December 2013. Please find enclosed a draft statement of expenditure for the period ending 24th of December. Accordingly, you may be required to contribute to those costs by payment of additional service charges to the extent that they exceed amounts already paid on account in accordance with the provisions of your lease." Oh my God. Just get to the point, man. So basically, this is very formal language. It's very impersonal language. And essentially what it's saying is that it's saying this. So basically, like the way it's written in the Landlord and Tenant Act, we are just letting you know that we had to spend this amount of money on the building this year just to keep the building going, just general running costs. So you'll find in the letter a statement of expenditure for the period, and because of that you might have to pay for some of those costs. All right, which is not a nice letter to receive, is it? It's not. I mean, this is the kind of thing, basically it's like you have to pay some money, but they've written it in this fancy impersonal language so that there's no offense, because if they were like, "Oi, you Luke, you've got to pay money. It costs us loads to run this building, so you've got to pay a bit more than normal, like everyone else. Sorry." Then you're going to be offended, aren't you? Instead, they write it in this very powerful, sort of impenetrable, formal style, which when you read it, you go, "Oh, God, this is serious. Oh, I better pay the money." You know, it's like when you get a letter from the bank. They don't go, "Dear Steve, sorry, mate, but you owe us, you don't have any money in your account, so you're going to have to pay us an extra £100 as a charge. Sorry about that. Can you do it in the next 5 days? Thanks." They would never do that. They would say, "In accordance with something like, what would it be? Pursuant to your account balance being in arrears to the tune of £17, we have been forced to apply charges to your account in excess of £100, but not exceeding £150, which will have to be paid pursuant to Article blah 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 of the Banking Code. Basically, it means you haven't got any money, so you have to pay us £100. But if I haven't got any money, how can I pay you £100 if I've got no money? Well, you should have thought of that before, shouldn't you, Mr. Thompson? But it's very inconvenient for us that you don't have any money. And to remedy that, you're going to have to pay us more. But I don't have any money. Sorry. Okay. So here's another one. You are writing to a manufacturing company requesting information about a new product range. I would say that one would be neutral to formal. Dear sir or madam, I am writing in order to inquire about your... I'm writing in order to inquire about an order of one of your products. Would you be able to send me a copy of your most recent catalogue? You can use the address above or by email at this address. Yours sincerely, Luke Thompson. For example, okay. How about this one? You're a marketing manager writing an internal email to a member of the accounts department who you know to ask for some sales data. You know this person because you sometimes have meetings with them and you have had lunch together a few times. And it would probably be this: Dear Amanda, or just like, Hi Amanda, because you know each other, right? Hi Amanda, could you send me the last quarterly report? Just so I can use it to prepare my presentation at the at next week's meeting. Thanks very much. Best regards, Luke. All right. There you go. So that's a kind of neutral to informal because you know the person, but it's business-like. How about this one? You're writing to your best friend. I think you know the answer already. You're writing to your best friend because you want to remind them to water the plants in your flat when you go away on holiday. So it'd be like, Hi Dave, just a quick reminder, don't forget to water the plants in the flat. Nice one, cheers. See you when I get back, the drinks are on me. Something like that. The drinks are on me. That means I'll pay for the drinks. And how about this one? You're writing to your wife or your husband or your boyfriend or girlfriend to suggest that you have pizza for dinner this evening. So you're writing a text to your partner to suggest that you have pizza for dinner. Now, that would be very informal. You could just do it like this. Pizza? Maybe that. Pizza? Heart? Because, you know, you should add the little heart. It's nice. Or just literally a little emoticon picture of a pizza with a question mark. Huh? Pizza? Just that. That's enough. If it's, you know, you know that person that well, just the least amount of information necessary with a little kiss. Pizza tonight? Kiss? Something like that. With phrasal verbs going... So, okay, did you get that? Formal, neutral and informal? All right. With phrasal verbs, I would say it's a fairly reliable rule that the more formal you get, the more formal the situation, the less you use them. Okay, so we do use them in neutral situations, but the more formal it becomes, if you're talking to Emperor Palpatine, you probably wouldn't use them. There's usually a formal equivalent to a phrasal verb, but it's usually a verb of Latin origin. For example, you've got call off the meeting. The equivalent would be cancel the meeting. Put off. Can we put off the meeting until next week, please? I've got some very important pizza to eat. Put off the meeting until next week. And the Latin version, or the sort of the bigger version, the more formal version, would be postpone the meeting until next week. Can you carry out that survey? Carry out that action. And the more formal version would be execute. Execute order 66. Can you carry out Order 66 within the next couple of days, please? Okay. Get something across. I'm just trying to get the message across. And the more formal version would be to communicate the message. Sorry about the hold up, or you're holding everyone up. And the more formal version would be to delay. You're delaying everything. I do apologize for the delay. Sorry about the hold up. Okay. Pick up. And collect, get off, and alight. Have you heard that one? If you've ever lived in the UK, if you've lived in London, you would have heard that. This is a District Line train to Cockfosters. Alight here, for Charing Cross Road. You know, a light here, just, it means get off. I've never, ever heard anyone say a light in any other situation except on the train network. You know, this is a Piccadilly line train to Cockfosters. There is actually a station on the London Underground called Cockfosters. Yeah, it's one of my favourites. I've never been there. I imagine they're just fostering loads of cocks there. Just cocks everywhere, because it's called Cockfosters. What's a... bring up a child to encourage the development of something, to stimulate, to cultivate. Like that, like a farmer would cultivate plants or crops. Foster traditionally used to mean cultivate. So Cockfosters, I suppose that's a place where they cultivated cocks. I imagine when it's cocks, it's chickens, right? It's nothing else. But it always makes you giggle a little bit. This is a Piccadilly line train to Cockfosters, a light here for the London Flower Museum or something. And you're like, this train's going to Cockfosters. Did you hear that? Yeah, if you've got a stupid sense of humour. Anyway. All right, get off, alight, and turn down would be refuse, okay? Phrasal verbs are less formal than their Latin equivalents, but you will find them in language including financial reports, professional emails, and so on. So if you're being really formal, avoid them. If you're just being neutral, you'll probably want to use them a bit. If you're being informal, you'll definitely use them a lot. That's the best I can say right now, Salwa, okay, without writing a whole book on the subject. So keep your eyes peeled when you're reading or hearing different types of English. See if you can notice the difference based on the context. All right then. Okay. Cat. The probably the most common commenter, most frequent commenter. I don't know if she is common. The most frequent commenter I still think is Kat. And she replied to Salwa and she said, Salwa, I have the same confusion here. I have to write tons of emails every day to people from different countries, using English, of course. The question I'm always asking myself is, how formal and how informal can I get without confusing the other side? Often I have to check myself before I wreck myself. Which is a kind of, that's a phrase that comes from like hip-hop, isn't it? Check yourself before you wreck yourself. Quite funny that Kat's using it there. Sometimes I have to check myself before I wreck myself. And at times I fail badly, I fear. The other day I wrote to a lady in the UK whose name is Claire. She wanted to double check on something and I wrote to her, "Hi Claire, I see there is a need for some clarification here." Nice one, Kat. Kat said, "Now I'm a bit worried. Maybe I shouldn't have written such things. What do you think?" Well, and then Kat, in another comment, said, "Then on the same day, I was desperately trying to invite some students to one event that we were organising for the said Claire. As I wrote to our students," she wrote this, "come and build a bridge to the University of Cambridge." Mm-hmm. Because I imagine that Claire is from Cambridge. So Kat said, "I don't know how it sounds for native speakers, but sometimes it's fun to have a bit of fun at work." Well, Kat, I like it. I have to say I enjoy it. I do enjoy that. "Hi, Claire. I see that there is some need for clarification here. Come and build a bridge to the University of Cambridge." Okay. Right. So, Kat, making jokes in emails. What do you think, listeners? What do you think? Well, I would say, obviously, it's fun, but beware of making jokes in emails. It almost never works. If you're lucky, Kat, Claire is 100% lovely, and she'll just find it charming. If she's 100% lovely, she'll just be like, "Oh, Kat's kind of got a nice sense of humour, isn't she?" And then she'll lean over to someone in the office. "Sandra, have you had an email from Kat? What is she like? Eh? Isn't she funny?" Now, if she's 100% lovely, she'll be like that. But what are the chances that she is 100% lovely? Okay, now, I think there's a big risk that she'll be
partly not lovely, because not everyone is 100% lovely. Some people aren't that lovely, and they don't have the patience for little jokes and things, because they're trying to work, and it's like serious work stuff. You know, serious. I'm a very serious person, working. And then you get an email based on your own name. Hi, Claire. I see there's some need for clarification here. And you might think, oh, God, that's annoying, isn't it? So there's a risk, you see, Kat, that Claire might find that a bit cheesy and a bit cheesy. Like clarification. Because humour is really hard to pull off, especially in writing, unless you're being self-deprecating. And I also don't recommend that too much either, especially in emails. But I would also say beware of making jokes with people's names. They might just get a bit triggered by it, you know, because people can be very touchy about that kind of thing. I mean, you know all this already, Kat. Honestly, you know all this. You just wanted to make a joke, I'm sure. Drinking some more water, excuse me. You know all of this, Kat. You probably just wanted to make a joke. But anyway, just here are my thoughts. I would say beware of making jokes with people's names. They might get a bit triggered by it, you know. They might not see the funny side of that. I feel a bit awkward here, you know, Kat, because I have said before that humour is everywhere in British culture, that we love humour. There's, you know, it's everywhere all the time. But remember that we do go for self-deprecating humour quite a lot. And that's kind of like understatement or putting ourselves down, making a joke at our own expense a little bit. If you do like wacky puns, like clarification, if you do a wacky pun on someone's name, they might just think that you're being a little bit annoying. They might find you to be like the annoying office joker. Every office has got one, the kind of guy who's like, you know, like David Brent in The Office. Now, I'm not comparing you to David Brent, Kat. I mean, technically I am a little bit, but I don't, you know, I'm not saying that you're like that. I'm just saying that beware, you know, there's a fine line between using humour and using it in not quite the right way. British people, we love a pun, we love a little joke, and Catherine, you are very charming, but I don't know the relationship that you have with Claire, so maybe she will like it, and it'll help you to bond. And when you finally meet Claire, Claire will be like, Kat, it's lovely to see you. I do love reading your emails. Oh, your sense of humour is wonderful. Your English is good, you know, and then you can say, well, you know, I've been listening to the In Our Time podcast. That's why. So, thing is, though, Kat, how is Claire supposed to respond to that joke? Hi, Claire. Maybe you need some clarification. How is Claire supposed to respond to that? It's actually hard for Claire to sort of do the same thing as you. It's hard for her to adopt the same tone. Because, you know the rule in emailing, that if you're not sure of what tone you should be using, you just copy the same tone the other person has used. So if they've written to you in a formal style, you write to them in the same formal style. If they've said hi at the beginning, you can say hi. You know, if you copy the other person's style, and that way you're on the same page. But how can Claire sort of follow that? I mean, it's quite hard. Does she have to do a joke now too? She's not going to do it because she might not have a good joke. She'd be like, dear Kat, I categorically disagree. Or, dear Kat, P.S., are you actually a cat? Because if you are a cat, that's amazing. You should be on YouTube. You know, she probably won't do that kind of thing. It's going to be difficult for her to respond in the same way. That's why it's potentially inappropriate. Because Claire's going to be like, how do I respond to that? Claire might find it cute. She might think you're a little bit nuts, to be honest. I think you're very charming, Kat. I think you know what you're doing. But anyway, I just thought I would say that. How do British people respond to that kind of thing? Well, I think I've given you some explanation about that there, you see. The Cambridge University joke is a little bit better, in my opinion, because it's not a joke about someone's name. Okay, so it's slightly better. There's slightly less potential for it backfiring on you. But thing is, right, with the Cambridge University one, build a bridge to the University of Cambridge. Does Claire work at the University of Cambridge? Now, if she does, fine, that's good. If she doesn't, then she might be thinking,
well, what do I have to do with the University of Cambridge? I work in Cambridge, but I'm not at the University of Cambridge. Actually, saying that, Kat, I think she probably does work at the University of Cambridge, right? Otherwise, you wouldn't have done that. You wouldn't have said that, I think. Anyway, I'm now teacher-splaining, aren't I? I'm teacher-splaining. Do you know what teacher-splaining is? I don't think it's a word. It's a portmanteau word that I've just come up with. Mansplaining. This is when men explain things to women in a patronising way. Like, you've got a new mobile phone. Look, here's how it works. You just flick that, press that button there, and email. You know what email is? Yeah, you know, you've used email. Here's how you set your email up, and just sort of the way that men assume that women don't know what they're doing, and they patronisingly explain things to them. It's called mansplaining. So there's this thing called mansplaining. Now I'm teacher-splaining. Teacher-splaining is when a teacher patronizes someone by explaining something to them in great detail when they already knew it, which is probably something I do all the time, because as a teacher, you know, I can't stop teaching. Maybe I'm teacher-splaining you now, and I might be making you feel bad, Kat. I hope not. Your jokes are sweet and nice, but the danger is that they might backfire on you. So in my experience, I don't do any jokes in my emails. I'm just nice and enthusiastic, and I try to refer to things that the person has said in the email if I can. I try and keep it short and simple, but I try to avoid the jokes because usually they don't work. And anyway, you don't know if they've worked. You can't see if the person's laughed or not. So I would avoid that kind of thing in emails, mainly because there's no chance for you to react quickly to rescue the situation if she doesn't like it or understand it. If you tell a little joke in a social situation and you see the person doesn't understand, you can rescue it by going, oh, I'm just joking, you know, or you can, you know, use your body language to show you're joking and then they'll know. But in email, you send it, whew, it's gone. You've got no way of recovering the situation. So it's just too risky. Email lacks all of the subtlety of body language. No, let's not go there. Body language, facial expressions and intonation that you need to help make a joke like that work. Okay, and I speak from experience, Kat. I speak from experience as someone who's put my foot in it by making silly jokes which impressed nobody. And I speak from experience as someone who has also found silly jokes to be slightly inappropriate and slightly annoying and awkward in emails too. Okay, right. I think we're nearly done here. How long have I been going for? An hour and 20 minutes. Right, that's it. Abort the episode now. It's too long. Okay, Laurentiu, are you still with us? I wonder if you're there. Anyway, everyone, thank you for listening to me rambling on about such things as, what did I talk about? The weather, the football, my teaching schedule, any Lepsters in Germany? Are you up for a meeting? Adam and his friend Laurentiu, trying to encourage Laurentiu to take the leap and try and get into speaking English and get over his shyness. And then some comments about prepositions on a bus and in a car, formal and informal language, and then using humour in emails. Okay, thanks so much for listening. Don't forget to join the mailing list on my website, teacherluke.co.uk, and you'll see a little thing in the right-hand corner. You can stick your email address in there whenever I upload a new episode. You'll get an email in your inbox, and not just new podcast episodes too. Sometimes it's extra little bits of content, and you can look forward to some of that coming soon, I think. I think I will be uploading a few things which will just be on the website. So that's just like a couple of extra little gifts for website Lepsters and email list subscribers. So watch your email lists over the coming few weeks. You might find some website only content coming fairly soon. Thanks so much for listening. I'm now going to go and drink lots more water because I'm really thirsty. Have a nice day, morning, night, evening, or whatever it is that you're doing. Thank you very much if you've written to me recently. I read all your messages. I don't get a chance to reply to them all, but thank you if you've written to me. Thank you also, sincerely, from the bottom of my heart, if you made a donation recently. That's really, really nice of you, and I appreciate your support. It helps a lot. Thank you so much, and I'll speak to you soon. But for now, it's time to say goodbye. Bye, 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 bye.
Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.